Welcome to the More Perfect Union, the podcast that offers real debate without the hate. Hello, I'm Kevin Kelton, and with me are...
DJ, a progressive conservative from Suffolk, Virginia.
Greg Matuszak, a common sense liberal who's still stationed in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Rebecca Kushmider, a progressive and shrill feminist from Kensington, Maryland.
We don't think you're shrill. And I'm Kevin, and I like to think of myself as a passionate moderate, whatever that means, living in Los Angeles, California. And we want to remind everybody that we also have a wonderful website where we post articles between our shows. The website is www.moreperfectunionpodcast.com. And Rebecca has been doing a series of articles called Pop Goes the Political, what's it called?
Pop Goes the Political Culture. I'm hitting the lighter side of news and events. Last week, I talked about really thrilling things like what book I'm reading and and who Donald Trump Jr. is dating 8 weeks after his wife filed for divorce. Eight.
Wow.
8 whole weeks.
Well, share with us. Who's he dating?
Kimberly Guilfoyle of Fox News. So we don't
That's
need
right.
to ask where they met.
Well,
no.
A lot of romances and bromances growing out of Fox News, but we'll get to that later. We have to start tonight with what's not really happy news. It's, I guess what's happy for the people in Israel is their new embassy in Jerusalem, which I'm sure many of them are very excited about. But what no one is happy about is the violence that is an outgrowth of that and also an outgrowth of the 70th anniversary of the creation of Israel. So last I heard, it was up to 58. Palestinians have died in these protests. What do you think, guys? Is this a situation of the Palestinians were actually just getting out of hand and were trying to storm the barricades, or did the Israeli military overreact?
Well, these protests have been ongoing since March. You know, they knew that this was going to happen, and you know, they could have anticipated what was going to happen and figured out ways of taking steps that didn't involve shooting people.
Although to be fair, according to the Israeli Defense Forces, this was not just a bunch of Gazans who were rushing the fence and trying to get into Israeli territory. The IDF says that there were Molotov cocktails used, that there were bombs thrown, Israeli forces. Now, how much lethal force the IDF should have used is a matter of debate, probably within Israel as well as within here. But you know, the idea that Hamas is completely blameless is not something that I'm going to go with here.
Well, you know, I think it was pretty obvious. We knew there was going to be violence. We knew there was going to be danger. I mean, at the very least, Trump sent Jared Kushner, I mean, knowing that he probably could lose someone. And so he sent the Kush, thinking...
Wait, so we're saying Kush is disposable now?
I'm not the one who said that.
No, Giuliani was the one who called him expendable earlier.
That's right. Giuliani called him. But Ivanka's also there, and he said that she's not expendable. She's a quality woman or something
right.
like that.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, the word was disposable. You had it right the first time.
Right. He's disposable. So, but what about the pastor that was blessing the event?
Oh, Hagee? The one who says that, like, Jews can't be saved and Islam is a scourge. And, like, even Mitt Romney's like, you know, this guy's a bigot, right?
Yeah,
right.
that was fantastic. We open this embassy that a largely Jewish democracy has asked for, and we send to bless it pastors who say that all of the Jews who live there are going to hell. Fantastic.
Well, you know, but this is all part of Christian dominionism. There's a sect within American evangelicalism that believes that retaking Jerusalem for the Jews and rebuilding the temple will usher in the return of Jesus, and I actually don't know what happens after that.
Well, before Jesus actually shows up, a lot of people die.
Well, yeah,
like,
I don't think that bothers them. I think they
die.
All assume they're going to be raptured up. It's going to be like, you know, some sort of tractor beam to heaven, and you know the rest of us are going to end up in whatever suck fest is left, and. Yeah, no, it's part of this weird end times prophecy. So, you know, they don't actually care as much about the citizens of Israel and what this means for them in terms of international relations. And it's more about this particular brand of religious zealotry.
It's about God saying to St. Peter, Petey, beam them up.
I think you've just made a lot of fandoms really mad, Christians and Star Trek fans.
Okay, so let's talk about something that should be just as worrisome, but at least it doesn't have any deaths associated with it yet, which is this Trump commitment to making communist China great again, as DJ put it, with his ZTE comments.
Yeah, this firm, ZTE, which is partially owned by the Chinese government through state-owned enterprises and such. ZTE first came on the scene in 2001 when they helped Saddam Hussein network his air defenses. It was one of the reasons why George W. Bush first bombed Iraq in 2001 to degrade that air defense network that ZTE helped build for them. ZTE has also been involved helping the Taliban in Afghanistan, with helping North Korea in telecommunications, with helping Iran in telecommunications. And in fact, what they did for Iran and North Korea was why they were essentially sanctioned by the Treasury Department and essentially told, basically, you're not going to be able to sell any phones in the United States for the next 7 years. So naturally, that got Zhang Nanhai, the Chinese Kremlin, very upset. And they've been trying to find all sorts of ways to convince Donald Trump to change the mind of his administration on this.
And how did he finally do that, DJ? I can't imagine. Why don't you fill us in?
Well, sure. According to the Huffington Post, the Chinese government, well, this part we know, the Chinese government managed to find an Indonesian amusement park that was worthy of $500 million in investment money. And if you include Chinese banks' involvement, and most of those banks are state-owned, I don't know which ones are involved
here. It's up to a billion.
It's up to a billion. Well, wouldn't you know it, that Indonesian amusement park happens to be a property that Trump is leasing his name to. And wouldn't you know
it?
And wouldn't you know it, 3 days after this deal goes down, Trump suddenly tweets ordering the Commerce Department to fix things so that ZTE can get back into the American market. And his exact words were, too many jobs in China being lost. Now, none of us here are Trump voters, but I know a few Trump voters, and I guarantee you that not a single one of them voted for Donald Trump because they were concerned about jobs being lost in communist China.
Now, I just want to jump in and give the Cliff Notes version of that because, DJ, you laid it out beautifully. But for those who might have gotten lost in some of the details, essentially, Trump threatened sanctions against this company. Then China came up with $1 billion in very questionable financing for an amusement park because Trump is going to be leasing the Trump brand to this amusement park, therefore making money off of it. And after that goes through, like the day or two later, after all that financing is arranged, Trump suddenly comes out and says, you know what? The Chinese are really hurting right now because of our sanctions against them, so we're going to help them out, which
that's
the
exactly
weirdest
it.
Thing I've ever heard in my life.
A former White House ethics lawyer, Richard Painter, is on Twitter saying, yes, this is a direct violation of the Emoluments Clause, in fact. So, yeah, there's serious constitutional questions involved.
It's called a freaking bribe.
It's a freaking bribe. It's a bribe.
If you're listening to this podcast and you're a Trump supporter, and we're glad you're here, but if you haven't figured out yet that this man is simply lining his pockets in the presidency while feeding you crumbs of like $35 or $50 a week in tax breaks while he's making billions, if you haven't figured that out yet, I don't know what to say. It's as plain as the nose on a clown's face.
Yeah, I mean, this is getting ridiculous at this point. At this point. But it's in my opinion, it's not just the Trump at this point, but people who are going along with this. Did anyone read...
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Right, well, hold on. This is my point. But did anyone read George Will's column from about 4 days ago about... Mike Pence.
I did.
Mike Pence. Yeah, I knew you would. I knew you. Why did I say anybody? I should have said, DJ, you read this.
There are some things I actually have not read. George Will's column wasn't one of them.
Right, but it was pretty much about Mike Pence's Faustian bargain, and it was really good, and I don't always like George Will. I think he's kind of a jackass, but...
Tell us how you pretty really feel,
Greg. That was the nicest thing. But pretty much George Will said, hey, look, Mike Pence, you sold out all your Christian values just to win. Is this what you wanted?
No, he got the embassy in Jerusalem. That's what Mike Pence wanted. It's the end times and the rapture and the Jesus and stuff. That's what he wanted. He doesn't care about the emoluments. Come on.
Yes, of course, the Jesus and stuff.
It's a really, really good article, especially when, you know, the Christian right is finally saying, wait a second, there has to be a line where maybe winning isn't as important to our values, because we've been talking about values a lot in that building on Sundays, and when the leader of our party and the leader of our country is just so apparently just against all the values that is taking bribes and is sleeping with women and his own wife gets sick this week and he can't be bothered to show up. You know, I mean, it just sucks that this is what we've sold. This is what we bought. And is it worth it? So because
a lot of the public seems to think so because he's up in the polls.
Oh, yeah.
He's still under 50%, though. It's not a lot of the public. It's a small fraction of the public.
Yeah, up for Donald Trump is an unusual definition. I mean, he's at about 42 or 43%.
Hey, you know what? Viagra's a thing, DJ.
Yeah. Indeed it is. So Trump's poll numbers...
Well, that's 2 points off of his all-time high, which was right after the inauguration.
So yes, Trump's poll numbers have taken the little blue pills.
He sure hasn't because he doesn't sleep with his wife anymore.
She's in the hospital for a week. I guarantee you she's taking this as an extended vacation from him.
Well, she wasn't sleeping with him to begin with. But anyways, I interrupted DJ. Go ahead.
No, that's fine. I think if we're going to talk about the poll numbers, that the fact of the matter is, and this is something that we have to remember, is that, you know, Trump has not really been doing the things that remind people why they don't like him. He has not gone to a whole lot of campaign rallies saying stupid things. He's largely been holed up in the White House, not saying much, not doing much. You know, he pulled out of the Iran agreement, which helped him with his base a lot and helped him with even a lot of never Trump Republicans who really just did not like the JCPOA at all. The North Korean situation has gotten him a lot of good press because no one's really paying too much attention to the fact that we're essentially giving away the store again to North Korea. So it's not really a surprise that he's sort of basking in the glow of this sort of thing.
You know, I actually tweeted about this recently, that his numbers go up the less he actually does that has to do with policy. And part of what's helping him is that Congress hasn't really been in session, or if they have been in session, it's been that sort of pro forma Congress thing where they're like, yeah, we'll name some post offices. Please don't look at us. We're running for re-election.
Right. They're not actually doing anything.
Right. So his agenda isn't actually moving at the moment. He's tweeting, playing golf, and he calendared a meeting. That's what's going on with him right now.
Right. But what is going to happen is as we get into August and September and October, he is going to hit the campaign trail. He's going to hit the campaign trail and he's going to say stupid. He's going to be Donald Trump on the campaign trail, which means he's going to energize Democrats all over the place and alienate independents. You know, just normally incumbent presidents don't do well on the campaign trail in midterm elections. Donald Trump is a ticking time bomb whenever he takes the stage. So he is going to say and do things that are going to rile up Democrats and alienate independents. It just hasn't happened yet because the campaign season hasn't started. Democrats need to be vigilant. They need to put in the effort. They need to put in the hours on campaigning and such. Those are the things they need to do. But they are going to make gains most certainly. And, you know, at the very least, they are going to reduce the Republican majority in the House. I still think they will eliminate the Republican majority in the House. situation does not look as good in the Senate now as it did before. But again, when Donald Trump says stupid things on the campaign trail, that will change.
The More Perfect Union podcast, now heard on iTunes and Blog Talk Radio. It's better than staying at home and listening to Michael Bolton. Mostly better.
But what do Democrats do with what we're now terming the regretful Trump voters? How do we win them back, DJ?
Well, this topic got started by a Kentucky businessman whose last name was Devine. I don't remember his first name. Who essentially voted for? He was not a guy who voted for Trump because he wanted to send a message to Washington. He was not a guy who voted for Trump because too many black people around him were being successful. He was a guy who voted for Trump because Trump had the R next to his name, so he figured Trump was better for business. And there are actually a lot of those voters who just voted for Trump out of inertia because he had the R next to his name, or who focused on the standard notion that Republicans are better for business owners and better for the economy, and they didn't pay attention to everything else around them. And now they're realizing, oh my God, I just wanted a Republican president and we got Donald Trump. He's doing things that Republican presidents normally don't do. The protectionism, the immigration crackdown, which actually damaged this fellow's business. And this fellow actually said at one point that he's convinced that Donald Trump is waging a war on brown people. So this is not really a self-absorbed guy. This is just a guy who, for whatever reason, didn't believe or didn't want to believe the warnings that so many of us had and gave and said about Donald Trump in 2016. The question is, what do we do about these voters? Because what I have seen on social media and regular media is a lot of Democrats whose attitude is, ha ha, sucks to be you. This is what you asked for when you voted for him. Go F yourself. And that's really not the way you build a winning coalition. I'm sorry. I get that Democrats are angry. I get that Clinton voters are angry. I was a Clinton voter and I was angry when the result came in. But the fact of the matter is there are a lot of voters who, for whatever reason, did not pay attention to our warnings and didn't vote for Trump to shake up the system. They weren't the converts, the converted voters in the Midwest who decided enough was enough and they're tired of being equal to people of color, they want to be superior to them again. No, the voters we're talking about are voters who just, they vote Republican because they always voted Republican, because they always presume Republicans are better for the economy, and now they're realizing otherwise, and they're lost and confused, and they're not sure where to go. These are the kind of voters that we should welcome, because we don't have to change our views on identity politics. And I say this as someone who disagrees with Democrats on a couple of things. I would love to see Democrats move closer on gun rights, but we don't have to do that to win this particular type of voter over. What we need to do is be a bit friendlier to markets, recognize that Trump's protectionism is damaging to the economy and explain why, and talk about why immigration is better for the country economically. These are all the things we have to do to win these voters over. We have to show that we are better stewards of the economy than Republicans are. That's not very hard.
Well, and that's something that we can do very, very specifically on a race-by-race basis, meaning political race.
Right.
Just so we're clear. You know, a guy in Kentucky has a different set of disappointments about what Trump has done than a guy in suburban Philadelphia. And it's worth examining what those different sets of disappointments are and speaking to them very directly. In Maryland right now, we're about to face a labor crisis because our crab picking houses have relied on seasonal labor from Mexico for years and years and years. Trump changed the system. Suddenly, we don't have the visas to employ the people to pick the crabs to sell to seafood suppliers all over the country. This is a major problem. We've lost the ability to hire 40% of a seasonal workforce. And so that is something that candidates should be speaking to very directly in Maryland. you know, just like speaking to livestock farming issues in Kentucky mm-hmm. is a very particular set of issues. But somebody in suburban Chicago, somebody in suburban Indianapolis is going to have a different set of concerns. And the candidates have to be very, very close to the pulse of those issues.
All right. So I see what you guys are talking about, like what the DNC can do, what the politicians can do. But as far as what we can do, and one of the things that I would like just Joe Average Kushmiter and not Jared.
Wait, are you telling me I need to be more polite to Trump voters?
Well, this is where we're going. This is where I'm going. Because in the late Obama years, or even during the Obama years, we saw tons of Obama memes. Okay, like, this is how bad Obama is, and this is how bad our president is, just the worst thing. Obama is the worst. And I used to remember saying, you know, if only I had, you know, Republican memes or how bad, you know, and I'd say, I guess there really aren't that bad, that many Republican memes. Well, guess what we have now? We have tons of Trump memes. People, stop. Stop putting Trump memes up. It doesn't help anybody. It doesn't change anybody's mind. It doesn't make everyone go, wow, that Trump meme? There. That was the moment that made me feel bad for casting my vote, and now I feel stupid. Stupider. And now I'm going to vote Democrat, or now I'm going to vote for the... No, stop.
That's actually... I saw an article, and I didn't read the whole thing, where Trump voters are feeling more loyal to Trump because people are insulting them.
Exactly.
You know, the F you, I'll do what I want crowd.
Right. No one likes to be shamed. So, stop doing that, people. And I've never seen a meme encompass a real coherent thought. And like, oh, well, that makes really good sense. No. Stop putting these memes up. Most of the time, they're false. I mean, did you all see the Facebook released, like, or was it the state? Someone released, like, 58,000 fake memes and whatnot that they were planting on Facebook.
Oh, no, the Congress committee of either the Senate or the House released all of those.
Right.
And I think the Democrats...
Wait, there's a House committee on memes? That's awesome.
No. This was the false... This was the fake news that was planted before and after the election they released.
Yes.
And a lot of them were memes.
I knew when we were talking about memes, Kevin would be on it.
Memes are generally false. Memes are false. It doesn't matter how funny or clever or you know how stick it to them you think it is. A meme has probably got some element of falsehood to do it. And don't spread them unless they're like a meme of a cat doing something funny and have nothing to do with politics.
It's far simpler. For all of you listeners out there, it's just go by this very simple rule. If someone sends you a meme, they're a Russian troll.
I was just going to say www.snopes.com.
No, just that's you see a meme, they're a Russian
DJ,
troll. That's it.
I'm not saying you're wrong, but you're killing me here, and let me tell you why. Because all you're doing is perpetuating this idea that if somebody supports someone that you don't like, they by definition are a Russian troll. And as the administrator of Open Fire, I'm now going to have people going, you see, even DJ says this group is full of trolls.
Well,
doesn't like a conservative or a Republican or a Trump supporter, they by definition are called Russian trolls. And they're not all Russian trolls.
I would say two things in response to that. One, I did not limit it to memes with which the person disagrees. Even if I agree with the meme, I'm going to assume it's a Russian troll because we know that's the way the Russians work. They play both things. They play both things in the middle. Number two, okay, I have said repeatedly on this podcast that Open Fire is full of Russian trolls. You're never going to get me to move off that, Kevin. I'm sorry.
I'm going to be a Russian troll for Halloween.
That's funny.
Just putting that out there. Gonna wear a fur hat with like hair sticking out of it, like a troll doll.
How about this, DJ? We should come up with like a cute little saying so people remember it, like a rhyme, like if someone sends you a meme, they're not what they seem. How's that? And then we'll go from there.
Are you writing a jingle?
Yeah, yeah.
He's
trying to channel
like...
Johnny Cochran here.
Yeah, yeah. If people send you a meme, they're not what they seem. Say it with me, jury.
Speaking of things that are not what they seem, so about 2 weeks ago, a gentleman named Eric Schneider, I shouldn't call him a gentleman, an attorney general in the state of New York named Eric Schneiderman,
P-O-S.
Resigned after
it wasn't
it came
even 2 weeks
out
ago,
that...
it was like last Tuesday.
Yeah.
I stand corrected. Time flies.
Time
when...
is compressed in the Trump administration. Things happen on a very strange schedule.
Right. So last week, Eric Schneiderman resigned after it came out that at least four women accuse him of having committed domestic violence in their relationships. Ouch. I'll just shorthand it that way. Yep. Well, this week, it came out that... I don't even know how to explain this. Who wants to take this?
Oh, I'll take it. This is so great. So... we've got this whole Eric Schneiderman assault situation. And he's also, and meanwhile, somewhere else in New York is Michael Cohen in court with all these documents that are currently being reviewed by a special master to determine if he's a Russian troll writing memes or what have you. And so suddenly this lawyer, whose name I'm forgetting, out of the blue writes to the judge in this case and says, hey, I'm going to need you to seal any documents that deal with Eric Schneiderman assaulting two women who aren't even the four women named in this article, because I had heard about this. I'd gotten this credible information in like 2013. And so what I did at the time was not go to the DA because I didn't trust him. So instead I went to a guy named Dunleavy, who was a tabloid columnist. Because that's normal.
Sure. That's what I would do.
And the tabloid columnist's response was, you know who you should talk to? And most people would say the field office for the FBI. But the columnist's actual response was Donald Trump. So this lawyer ends up having a conversation about Eric Schneiderman assaulting his women he dates with Donald Trump and Michael Cohen. And he's worried that Michael Cohen wrote this down and it's now under review by this judge. Or by the special master. To make a long story short, it appears that Donald Trump and Michael Cohen were in possession of information about Eric Schneiderman dating back to 2013, which Trump was vague tweeting about contemporaneously. And I think they were attempting to blackmail Eric Schneiderman.
No. I don't think that's a contention. I think the contention is that Cohen and Trump and people associated with them released this information to the press to get Schneiderman out of there, because Schneiderman is one of the hardest anti-Trump prosecutors in the country. So it wasn't about blackmailing him.
Well,
it was about unseating him.
At the time, it may have been about blackmailing him, because that was when the Trump University investigation was going on. So they were considering what to do with that information as far back
as 2013. Right, right, right. But this whole thing exploded in the press last week. And as I read the article, maybe I had a different take on it. Maybe I inferred a lot into it. But as I read the article, it was that, why did this suddenly come out now in the middle of the whole Michael Cohen thing? Well, it had something to do with Cohen and Trump trying to get this guy in trouble, which actually happened because he had to resign.
Well, and I'm wondering why this lawyer suddenly appeared out of the blue right now with this information when he...
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the whole thing is freaking weird. Everyone in New York appears to be shady, shady, and shadier. And I know DJ often talks about the level of corruption in Albany, and it's like a disease that's infecting my entire home state.
The best line about politics in New York State, it was actually written by the scriptwriter in Billions. He used it for, he gave it to the character Lonnie Watkins or Lonnie, I can't remember. The line is.
Lonnie.
Yeah, Lonnie. He gave it to Lonnie. It's Albany. You can't have a bake sale without kickbacks. That's pretty much Albany.
And this isn't even Albany. This is New York City. So it's even greasier than that somehow.
Schneiderman was the state attorney general. That's Albany.
Oh, he is Albany. Okay, but I was thinking the New York Daily News part of it, which, you know, is a New York City tabloid. But I mean, like, really, it, you know, at the point that you hear that, oh, the AG is beating up his girlfriend, well, why do you call a gossip columnist? That's like calling me.
Well, speaking of gossip, before the show, Rebecca, you were telling us that you've got a new obsession that you were writing about today, and you're now the world's leading expert on...
Michael Avenatti, my editor at a site called Your Tango that I write for, assigned me a piece about Michael Avenatti, so I spent the morning researching him. And I found out that he worked for an opposition research firm helmed by Rahm Emanuel. And for Obama administration political junkies, that makes perfect sense.
This was years ago.
Years and years ago. It was pre-Obama, I think, actually. But Rahm Emanuel is known as kind of a pit bull of the Democratic Party and a guy who basically can't speak without F-bombs. But he's such a badass that, like, he cut off one of his fingers in a deli meat slicing machine at one point, and he was in the Israeli army and also was a ballerina. I mean, like, Rahm Emanuel is possibly the most interesting person in politics and also maybe the worst mayor Chicago's ever had. But yeah.
By the way, do you remember the great Obama line about Rahm Emanuel?
Oh, losing his finger and it rendering him mute?
Yeah. Because it was his middle finger. Rahm was known for having using a lot of four-letter words.
Oh my God! Yeah. So yeah. And so if that's the school of politics that Michael Avenatti comes from, it makes sense that he is, you know, such a bulldog going after Trump on TV. He's Stormy Daniels' lawyer, and the reason I was assigned to write about him is because he's hot and he's
Hey, listen. Let me say something. I have a friend who has a female friend. I'm not going to mention names, but they listen to this podcast. And this female friend of a friend thinks Michael Avenatti is really sexy.
No, he's known as Hottie Avenatti or Michael Avenatti.
Oh, really?
And Rahm Emanuel's also really hot, so it makes sense. I'm kind of democratically breathless about this whole thing of, you know, hot Avenatti and hot Rahm, you know.
But wait a second. But you also told us something that, again, I didn't know until you told us right before we started recording tonight, was that Michael Avenatti no longer lives...
He's no longer residing with his wife. In December, she kicked him out of their house and changed the locks. No one knows why.
No one knows why, but he is representing Stephanie Clifford.
Yes. But you know what? He didn't start representing Stephanie Clifford till months after that. And he also claims that he has not watched her movies. He's done research on his client, but it has not included watching films that she's either acted in or directed. He claims to have no problem with porn, but he has not watched her movies.
We want him to answer that question.
Oh, that's shenanigans. That's shenanigans.
Mr. Avenatti, I don't know whether you're listening, but when Greg calls shenanigans on you, that's about as bad as it gets.
Look, I'm trying to think. I'm going to have to think about this question real quick. Do I know anyone who's ever done porn? Do I know anyone who's ever done porn? Do I know anyone? No, I don't. Not personally.
Anyone who's done porn. And well, Kevin actually is probably more likely to know someone who's done porn of the four of us on this podcast.
I actually do.
Oh, you do know someone who's done porn?
I know several people that have done porn.
Did you look them up?
No. One of them I only know because I used to work for a business ethics and compliance company called LRN, and my job was creating training videos to teach ethics to people in the business world. And we did one that was had a soccer theme to it, and there was a guy that we cast as a soccer player. And a few months later, I was watching Showtime After Dark.
Sure.
There was my actor, or Cinemax After Dark, whatever it was, and there was my actor in this show about college people that were humping every 15 minutes.
Well, that's kind of true about college. I mean, let's be honest.
Sure.
That's what college is all about.
Sure, we went to school in the 80s.
But I know a few people that have worked in that industry. Only men. If I know women that have worked in it, I don't know of it. But I know a couple of guys.
I know one guy tangentially, like a friend of a friend. And
have you Googled his movies? Like, have you checked it
out? Yes, I have.
Yes, you have.
Yeah, I mean, how can you not when someone says, yeah, by the way, I'm friends with this person, by the way. He does adult films, and I'm like, really? I've got to see this. This is a world I know nothing about, and it's not really my bag. But sure, you know, why not?
It's a legit line of business. There are people who are making bank.
Right. And, you know, it's something like anyone who said, and it's not that I, but it's someone who's a little closer. He's such a liar, this guy.
Avenatti? Yeah, no, I'm certain he's watched Stormy Daniels' videos.
Oh, you mean he's lying about not having watched Stormy Daniels?
Yeah.
I didn't...
His credibility as a lawyer now is totally shot. You know, I mean, why doesn't he just admit it? You know, yes, I have. I was kind of curious.
Maybe he felt that he could not perform the job of being her legal representative if he watched that kind of
movie. No.
Kevin, are you saying Michael Avenatti had performance anxiety?
Oh, for God's sake, DJ.
No.
The little blue pill.
He's also a professional race car driver on the side, or at least he was until 2015.
He should have said, I was sitting around in my legal briefs, and one thing came along, and... the computer just opened, and there it was. I know, I threw that visual out for you.
So, talking about pornography, what about this new bromance between Donald Trump and none other than Sean Hannity? Who apparently have long, late-night conversations after Sean's Fox show ends. They get on the phone and talk like a couple of high school girls. And they just love to gossip. Did you guys read that article today?
I saw the highlights. Fill us in, Kevin. Give us the goods.
So apparently, every single night or most nights of the week, first of all, Donald Trump no longer shares the same bedroom with Melania. That apparently was a secret to no one in Washington, but it was a secret to me.
Are you waiting for us to disagree with you on that one? Because that's not going to happen.
That was revealed when they first moved in, that they were maintaining separate quarters and they were the first couple to do so in like a bazillion years.
Yeah.
I was busy watching Cinemax porn, so I missed that story. But anyways, so apparently he needs someone to, to work out his frustration at the end of the day. And his pillow talk is with Sean Hannity. And these two get on the phone every night. And the way this article was laid out, Sean Hannity is the Trump whisperer. He knows how to talk to him. He knows how to play to his vanity. And he knows how to get him to do things that, frankly, Trump's staff has not yet mastered. He knows how to move him on issues. He knows what motivates him. He knows how to get under his skin in a way to get him to do something.
Wait, I thought, are we still talking about Cinemax After Dark?
Pretty close, Craig, yeah.
Yeah.
We're talking about Trump After Dark. And
oh my God.
So these two guys are now bestest buddies, which I think is one of the biggest conflicts of interest that I've ever heard of. You have a journalist, and please don't tell me he's not a journalist. He is. He's a broadcast journalist. That's what they do. They go on TV, and they talk about the news.
Yeah, no, if the word news is in the name of your network, you are officially a news person. You are not an entertainer.
And if you are interviewing people like Rudy Giuliani and breaking information that then becomes the hot topic of all of the cable outlets for the next 48 to 72 hours to a week, by definition, you're a newsmaker. So this argument that he's just a commentator is pure BS. But I found it fascinating that these two are now buddy-buddy. I also found it fascinating, another thing that I found out in that article, is that you'll remember a couple of weeks ago when they came out with Michael Cohen's three clients, and this came out in an open court. One was, of course, Donald Trump. Another one turned out to be Sean Hannity. He was the one that was revealed last. But the middle one was this gentleman, Broidy, I forget his first name, who was the RNC finance chairman, who apparently was dating a woman. He got her pregnant, and he turned to Michael Cohen to work out the $1.6 million buy-off with an NDA, non-disclosure agreement, to get this woman never to speak of their illicit romance. But the new theory in D.C. now is, Rebecca, you want to?
That it wasn't Elliot Broidy who got the woman pregnant, that it was actually Trump, and somehow Broidy took the fall for that.
Right, that he was, because remember, the way this narrative plays out is, look, Michael Cohen had to refinance his home to come up with that $130,000 for Stephanie Clifford, a.k.a. Stormy Daniels.
Or he didn't, because he was getting paid by AT&T.
Right. Well, that came later. But he was not in no position to come up with $1.6 million, which is what this woman was demanding. And so the paperwork for the NDA, they both used the same name for the woman, the same nom de plume. And they both used the same name, David Dennison, for the gentleman on the other side of the non-disclosure agreement. And since Michael Cohen represented Donald Trump in the Stormy Daniels case, and here Cohen is supposedly representing this guy Broidy, but they're using Donald Trump's fake name, his AKA, also known as, and the person who represented the other woman was the same lawyer who represented Stormy Daniels. It's all so cozy that it just seems like, well, maybe this guy, Elliot Broidy, was simply the financer of this payoff because he was known to make big payoffs for Republican,
finance chairs?
Well, no, for things that were good for the Republican Party. He was known as a bag man for the Republican Party.
Yeah.
And he might have just taken taken the bullet to save Trump. And he quit and he publicly was humiliated and he went home and he told his wife, look, it wasn't really me, honey. It was Donald Trump. I'm just taking the fall for him so he doesn't, get impeached. Anyway, that's the story. I believe it. I love it. But I'm not going to make a meme out of it.
No memes.
Yeah, that no was,
they send you a meme, they're not what they seem.
No memes.
No memes. No memes. But you know what's worthy of a lot of memes? The royal wedding. And I couldn't be more excited because I have to tell you the truth right now. If you put me on the witness stand and made me raise my right hand and swear to God, I couldn't tell you who is getting married in this royal wedding. I have no idea.
God, Kevin, you're really? Such a guy.
Yeah.
You're such a guy.
Oh.
Who's getting married? Somebody in the royal family, I take it.
Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. I'm a guy who reads British press.
Oh, yes, I've heard of them.
So, DJ, is this a huge wedding in British press, or is this sort of like, she's American,
she's Canadian.
Is she Canadian?
She's Canadian.
Oh, she's not British. This is it. This is not,
she's not British. She's divorced. She's biracial. She's an actress. She's having to give up her career for love of Prince Harry.
Actually, and that's why it is such a big deal, because this is not your typical British wedding, or not your typical royal family wedding. This is the kind of thing
that what's his name had to give up his throne for. He abdicated to marry a divorced American.
Wallace
Simpson. Yeah. The guy who married
Edward.
Wallace Simpson,
That was Edward.
Yeah.
Well, except for two different things. One, Prince Harry is not expected. Prince Harry is not expected to have to attain the throne because there is his older brother and his older brother's three children. And but Prince Harry is not accused of Nazi sympathies, which King Edward was. So. That had a little something to do with it. Actually, no, it had a lot of something to do with it. But no, this is seen as sort of a modernizing wedding for the royal family. This is an attempt for the royal family to sort of become more of a 20th century family, if you will. It has just about everyone's attention. And the other thing is, it is abundantly clear to anyone around them that Harry and Meghan are very much genuinely in love, which is not something you could say for just about any other royal wedding except for Elizabeth and Philip, God knows how many years ago, and William and Kate a few years ago. Royal weddings that actually involve affection are few and far between. This happens to be one of them, and that's why I think it's gotten so much attention.
Oh, you're such a cynic. Rebecca, will you please update us on the website about all of the background of the royal wedding so that those of us who are not going to watch it
will
still know what happened.
I can't believe you're not going to watch it. It's going to be on at 4 a.m. your time, Kevin. You're not going to crawl out of bed to see what, weird royal cousins are wearing on their heads.
I'll probably still be editing this podcast.
Yes, I will update you all.
Well, we want to thank everybody for listening, and we want to wish everybody a very happy royal wedding between podcasts. Please follow us on Twitter at #MorePerfectUnionPodcast and on Facebook at facebook.com/MorePerfectUnionPodcast and share our link on your Facebook timeline so your friends can discover us as well. So, okay, what is everybody wearing to the royal wedding? Greg, what are you going to wear?
A large hat, because hats are in.